Business success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Join RVK for the award-winning RV on Business Show every Tuesday at 12 midday. It's not about thinking out of the box. There is no box. Only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome to 101.9 Chai FM. It is 10 minutes past 12, and we have a familiar guest on the show, someone we've spoken to before, Philip Joubert, who is the manager at the South African Institute of Professional Accountants. Philip, welcome back to Chai FM.
Avi, thank you very much, and welcome. I'm happy to be back.
Great. Well, Philip, we always say, you know, you're here around the dinner table, that the rich get away with murder, so to speak, and they have ways of dodging tax, and they have hiding things, and therefore the rich get richer and the poorer get poorer. And maybe it's really a case of the rich having access to, you know, just to knowledge and to systems that allow them to structure things in such a way that they are more tax efficient than maybe those who are not sophisticated and simply follow the rules as they are presented to them with a tax table. But SARS ultimately wants to make sure that everybody is putting in their pound of flesh. So let's get into it. Why is SARS looking to streamline the compliance of high wealth individuals?
Well, I mean, it was actually noted a while ago by the commissioner that high wealth individuals, because they make use of sometimes unscrupulous and maybe dodgy tax practitioners and tax advisors, to structure their affairs in such a way that they pay the least amount of tax. Now, over the years, SARS has introduced numerous amounts of anti-avoidance rules. We've got the general anti-avoidance rule. If you've got a trust, you know about Section 7C and the wealth distribution or the wealth movement into trusts to deal with all of that. So, and the high wealth individual unit that SARS has brought back recently has actually been around for quite a while with great success. So the purpose of that is to make compliance easier for in difficult, complex situations, but also, like you said, to make sure that everybody pays their pound of flesh to SARS, the right amount.
This unit that you're speaking about that has been brought back, so to speak, was that one of the units that was disbanded during the dark days of SARS after Pravin Gordhan was moved out and we just had chaos that moved in?
Unfortunately, yes. It is one of the units that did see the end during that period. And those people just actually moved into different areas in SARS where they still try to apply the same amount of diligence and everything that they did in the past to the people, to the taxpayers that they've dealt with. But hopefully by having this unit back, you now actually have an opportunity to strengthen SARS's capabilities and actually restore trust by the people that contribute the most, the individual that contribute the most to the fiscus in this tax system.
No, I think that's really what it's all about, is that everybody sort of shares the burden, and those who can afford, you know, do pay, and those who have made money through the country need to pay their portion. But one of the questions that just came through, which I was about to ask, is what is the definition of a high wealth individual?
So currently SARS is looking at any individual with an asset base of above 50 million rand.
5-0.
So yes, 5-0. So that includes your investments, your homes, your vehicles, your artwork on the wall, and literally any asset that's got any value. So that it exceeds 50 million, you would be considered a high wealth individual.
So Philip, if you really had to look at it, I'm sure that is a very, very small portion of the tax paying populace that would fit into that category.
Yes and no. The number is actually surprisingly higher than initially expected by the commissioner. But for the most part, yes, out of the 23 million taxpayer base, I think only about 8,000 people currently fall under the auspices of the high wealth individual unit. But as SOC gathers more data, more intelligence, that number might jump dramatically.
Okay, interesting. So let's put it this way, that SARS, you said that SARS has put more capacity in place. In other words, they've rejuvenated units that were disbanded who are now focusing specifically on this. But what technology are they bringing into play that is going to help them with this? Because one of the major successes of the country and of SARS specifically is e-filing. Now, every guy can do their own tax if they just got a simple tax return. It's quick and it's efficient. And on the most part, it works very, very nicely. So what fancy technology are they going to bring in now that's going to assist them?
So, Avi, I want to take just a step back. In November last year, during the accounting in Durban, one of the presenters actually still pulled out a paper manual ITR 12 that was submitted to SARS in 2008. So it's not even 20 years old yet, properly 20 years old yet. And just looking at how the technology has improved, from us manually completing tax returns, and I'm fortunate enough that I still did articles the day when you manually completed all your returns, to submitting those returns and somebody manually starts capturing the data or transferring the data from what you submitted on your form into their computer systems, to moving into the OCR space where they scan the information and the computers did the optical character recognition. Now, that technology today, we know it's still flawed when you do a conversion from a PDF to Word or Excel. There was a lot of issues. So e-filing really made it a lot easier. I mean, if you look at it now, you submit a tax income tax return today. Within 5 to 60 seconds, you have an assessment.
That's phenomenal.
Which means that must be done by a computer. No individual can do that kind of calculations and application of rules so quickly. So artificial intelligence, the big buzzword, especially among SARS and dealing with taxes, it has actually been around for a while. And AI in a tax situation can literally be anything from just making sure that the correct rules are followed to looking for anomalies and things like that. And that is where SARS has pushed e-filing into. As e-filing is, as much as you file your returns in that, it's almost more of a data collection point. So you submit all your data, and yes, SARS applies the rules and you get your assessment. But in the background, there's also risk engines and various other systems running that SARS, I'm pretty sure, would not want the general public to know all the finer detail about. But that is all running in the background to see if there's been any anomalies. If you've submitted a VAT return recently and you suddenly have a refund in the last 5 years you've just been paying, that's an anomaly and it immediately throws out a risk. So SARS is using that kind of AI tools to work on the data that you submit. Now, when it comes to data, the next thing is third-party data submissions. And we are currently in that reporting period to SARS. And that includes your employer's reconciliations, which is your IP5s, and your IT3As. Your banks are submitting your interest certificates, your capital gain certificates, all of those, that information. And as that information comes in, SARS systems are already running through the information to see where there is a potential risk for them. Now, that's all good and well. That's information being supplied to SARS. SARS also has the power to access your bank account to look for any anomalies there. Does the money that has come into your bank account actually match what you've declared on your income tax return? And we've even heard complaints from some members where they will look at a ClearScore report, a credit report from TransUnion or one of these other credit bureaus, and suddenly there's an inquiry from SARS. And that is all just to make sure that what you say is actually fair and true. So the next step, I believe, that we're really going to see is SARS making use of technology and tools to look at things like social media pages. Does what you're showing on your social media pages, for example, reflect your true, what you reflect or telling them? If you always bragging about going to all these antique car shows and you've got this massive collection and you have never reported it to SaaS, the technology will pick it up and SaaS will come to you and say, hey, why haven't you said anything? What are you hiding? And I think that is where a lot of concern comes in for taxpayers as well.
You know, it's always an interesting thing that those that are clean and have declared everything, this sort of conversation might be an irritant. But for those who haven't, all of a sudden you start hearing buzzwords like Big Brother and micromanaging and, you know, privacy perforation and all those sort of things. The bottom line is that you live in a country, you need to be able to be absolutely on board with the revenue services and declare everything. Philip, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, what I want to discuss is one of the questions that are being asked about how WealthNet individuals is about worldwide assets. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM and online with me. Sorry about this, I have a technology glitch. Online with me is Philip Jobert from the South African Institute of Professional Accountants. Philip, the question that came through just before the break was about high net worth individuals and worldwide assets. I know that, for example, American citizens, there are very, very many American citizens who don't live in America anymore who have contemplated or who already have given up their American citizenship simply because by being an American citizen, you pay tax on your worldwide assets. How does this scenario work in South Africa?
So the South African tax legislation is quite simple in that regard. Any South African tax resident is taxed on their worldwide income in South Africa as well. Now, obviously, we've got multiple double tax agreements and treaties and things in place to prevent, I almost want to say, people from just paying tax. And in the end, you're sitting with nothing left. But so we don't necessarily pay tax on the assets being held offshore. You obviously, a couple of years ago, SARS had a special voluntary disclosure program where people were requested to come forward and say, listen, but I've got all these assets abroad. Now, SARS doesn't care that you have these assets at the moment. When SARS really gets interested is when you dispose of those assets. And that's when they want their pound of flesh, obviously in terms of the treaties and agreements. So SARS is one of the revenue services that forms part of automatic exchange of information. Now, when we think of that, we immediately think of multinational corporations and making sure that what's reported in South Africa is reported as well in the UK or in the US, for example. But the same actually applies on individuals. It's maybe we don't necessarily see it to the same extent, but that same sharing of information is still happening between all the various revenue services. So you can't hide anymore. So your best bet in that regard would be, for in your example, where the Americans are leaving the US and giving up their citizenship so they're not taxing the assets, to then move to a place where you've got a more beneficial tax rate. But then you still need to know that depending on the laws of that country, you will probably still be taxed on income from other sources worldwide as well because of this information exchange.
And interesting, what people find is once they started investigating the scenario is that, yes, tax in South Africa is high, and the complaint by most South Africans is that, you know, we don't get value for our tax money. But our tax rates are in line with many of the big countries in the world. We're not over the top. There are certain countries that have higher tax rates than us. Yes, there's more social benefits for the individual, but you're paying for that through your tax. Philip, if we have to look into a crystal ball and look into the future, what do high net worth individuals actually need to do in the next short while just to get their affairs in order so that they can put their head on their pillow at night and not be concerned? I'm sure for a lot of them, it's been a scenario where they've just kept quiet because no one's asked them anything. Or, you know, if you don't kick the bear, it won't wake up and come after you. What is the right approach for people who feel that not everything has been declared, not all assets have been declared, they didn't take advantage of previous amnesties, or didn't apply to them at that stage. What is their way forward?
Your best bet is still to make sure that you come clean. In terms of the voluntary disclosure program that is now a permanent part of our Tax Administration Act, you will not necessarily be penalized on under declaration of foreign income that you did not declare in the past. So you might still be liable for penalties, and you might still be bumped on the nose a little bit by the Reserve Bank for not declaring all your interests abroad.
Right.
But your best bet is, if you have not come clean yet, to do that. You'll get your bump on the nose. You will have to pay penalties to an extent, maybe some interest, but you will be able to sleep a lot easier. Because if you look at the different penalty tables in the Tax Administration Act, willfully hiding something from SARS can give you a penalty of up to 200%. So double what you should have originally paid, meaning you plus interest plus then the amount that you owed. So that means that you're going to be paying 3-4 times what you would have. So it is better to come clean, or if you really have, or you can take the chance. I think that's not the viable option, because you will be caught out.
Philip, how does it work with corporations where corporations are trading under different names all over the world, and they've got CEOs that maybe sit offshore, but they run the entire portfolio, the company multinational portfolio? Does SARS have the ability, or does it have treaties with other revenue services around the world to look at those companies?
I mean, yes, they do. And it's not just SARS that has got the capabilities. This through the OECD and the base erosion profit shifting agreements, transfer pricing, all of this is all part of the exchange of information. So it does make it easier for revenue services worldwide to link. Another thing that came up recently and that had a lot of tax practitioners and accountants pulling their hair out is the beneficial ownership requirements that you need to report to the master if it's a trust, or CIPC if it's a company. So that beneficial ownership information then becomes public record for government, and they can match that and share that information in terms of the exchange of information agreements with other revenue services. So again, it all comes back down to almost a central database that's being built with all the information of everybody and who owns who and who does what there.
But, you know, a question that's just come through, I suppose it's a little bit cheeky, but unfortunately a little bit true. Noctula wants to know, she says like this: we had a very efficient SARS regime under Pravin Gordhan, and it then went to a ball of, and I won't use the word, and it is now being rebuilt. Have we regained the losses that we made, and are we as efficient as we were in the days where it was one of the best revenue services in the world?
So the answer there is unfortunately yes and no. The dark period at SARS did put the revenue services quite far back. Under the current commissioner, there has been a lot of momentum going forward and new things that have come in that has actually propelled and erased some of the negatives of the past. The problem is still, with a lot of taxpayers, the level of service that they get from the individuals. So as SARS becomes more and more reliant on their technology tools, it does feel to a lot of taxpayers and practitioners that they're losing that personal touch, which was quite prominent during the days of Pravin Gordhan.
Right.
Now, the revenue service, and the commissioner has actually been on record that the level of service that he wants SARS to provide is none. And the moment you say that, everybody's shocked and think, okay, what does he actually mean? It means that he wants the revenue service to be on such a level that there is no need for phoning the contact center to follow up on a refund, that kind of thing. And the use of technology and the way technology is advancing, not just what SARS is using, but what we see every day, that is definitely an achievable goal. One of the projects that SARS has launched recently is the VAT modernization project, where in the end, they want the goal is that that vendor should not even be submitting a return. All the information is automatically picked up on a almost on a transaction by transaction basis. Now, we also know there's lots of technological and other matters that we need to consider in that. So it's not an unfortunate immediate quick fix and will save a lot of admin and burden for the taxpayer. But it is a process and it will get there at some point, especially as more and more of the country gets connected to the internet.
Okay. But at the end of the day, one thing we've seen is that SARS is definitely able to produce phenomenal results using AI and using technology in order to benefit us as the taxpayer. A question that's just come through, Philip, which is quite interesting, is SARS bringing in this new tax or tax regime on high wealth individuals because they have not met targets, or is it because the efficiencies have increased, or is it both? I think that's a fair question.
It's a bit of a combination of both, but it's also the complexity of a lot of the high wealth individuals' asset structures, if you look at that. So it is. So a lot of the staff that are involved in the high wealth individuals are very technically adept. They know the various tax laws in and out, and it is to provide almost, I don't want to say preferential treatment to these individuals, but it is to assist them to make sure that they comply a lot easier. So it's not necessarily a new regime. It's the same rules apply to everybody. It's just almost like there's a bit more of a handholding for the people with the most complex systems.
I mean, that's something that you said now a few times. It's the complexity of the high net worth individual where they actually need a higher level or a more sophisticated level of complexity and technical know-how in order to make their lives efficient. And I suppose if the process is so cumbersome and so onerous on them, why should they bother to comply? It's almost easier to dodge it. But if the system works easily and efficiently and their practitioners know how to work with the system, then it's a win-win situation. Philip, I was in a meeting a while ago with some accountants, and these are guys who've been around for a while, have adapted very, very comfortably to the change in SARS. But one of the things that they did bring up was that there is no longer anybody, to go and speak to. They said, like in the while ago, you could make an appointment, you could go in, sit down with the file, and go through it with someone. That doesn't exist anymore, and they're finding that's the frustration because you need to wait for SARS to come back to you with a rejection or whatever it is, and then you need to reapply and have another waiting period. Are you finding a similar thing?
Definitely. It is probably, especially when I say from the older generation of practitioners that I deal with, one of the biggest complaints. And I understand where that frustration comes from. It did feel a lot more efficient being able to walk into a SARS branch with your stack of files and sit with the SARS official and sort out 5-6 taxpayers' issues in one go. Unfortunately, during the dark period, that system was really abused. And that is why the whole system changed. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it understand, but also unfortunately, understanding why it changed doesn't necessarily make it easier to sort out your issues. We are engaging with SARS and not just SIPA, but all the recognized controlling bodies is engaging with SARS on a regular basis to improve this kind of communication flow between taxpayers and SARS, to improve systems. One of the recent recommendations from the budget was the introduction of a similar process to the alternative dispute resolution or ADR meetings that's held at an appeal stage to bring that forward into objection phase. Because then you can actually sit and talk to an individual and explain the situation. And that would probably resolve a lot of issues, especially if it's something as simple or a simple misunderstanding or application of the law. Now, dealing with SARS as well, the SARS does have a lot of virtual appointments available. Unfortunately, they do get snapped up quite quickly. So if you early in the morning in your office and you can get it, make your appointment, go for it. There is still a bit of a resource constraint on SARS in that regard. And unfortunately, within the SARS mandates and protocols, there are also certain limitations that these individuals that you actually do meet with cannot assist you with. It does need to go to senior officials. And that causes an additional delay. It is sad that it had to go this way, but it is good governance to make sure the correct steps and procedures are followed and somebody doesn't act outside of their level of authority. Because it could be detrimental to the taxpayer and the fiscus as well.
You know, Philip, I just got a very interesting message from a guy who's put his name but wants to remain anonymous. He says that he had a hassle with SARS year after year with non-tax residency, etc. And eventually on the second year, SIPA intervened on my behalf after 6 months of backwards and forwards, and it got sorted out in a week. Why can we or our practitioners not approach SIPA any earlier than this, where they feel they've reached the end of the line with the normal process? Well, that's an interesting question. So in other words, at what stage can a tax practitioner call you and say, Philip, I'm going absolutely out of my mind. I need you guys to intervene.
So I think in terms of the legislation and the SARS service charter, SARS is required to do certain things within a certain amount of time. That includes the tax residency matter for the example that you gave now. Now, if SARS does not stick to that, either legislates to all agreed upon time frame, you as taxpayer or the tax practitioner must lodge a formal complaint through the SARS Complaints Management Office. They've got, you either do that via e-filing or they've got their own contact number where you can phone them, and was recently changed as well to a toll-free number so that you can lodge complaints a lot quicker. Now, under normal circumstances, lodging that complaint actually pushes, I don't want to say pushes your case forward, but it does push SARS to get to focus on these outstanding matters and get it resolved. Subsequent to that, the taxpayer is supposed to lodge a complaint with the Office of the Tax Ombud to assist you with this. But the Tax Ombud only looks at cases once you've exhausted all internal SARS channels by following up, lodging the complaints, all of that. Now, due to the way the commissioner is seeing tax practitioners as well as the stakeholder relationship teams that we deal with at SARS, all RCBs have a, almost want to call it a side entry into SARS, where we can escalate a matter on behalf of a tax practitioner. And you must be, as a tax practitioner, you must belong to a recognized controlling body, and you must lodge that complaint through your own recognized controlling body. But what normally happens in that situation is SARS treats that as an additional complaint and kicks the ball down back to the team responsible for resolving the matter to get it done. It's just a little bit of extra pressure that's being applied internally from higher levels down.
But the bottom line is that the average Joe needs to wait for their process to be exhausted, go through all the normal channels, wait for all the SLA, service limit agreement times, before things can get done. And it does take a bit of time. Philip, as you can see, we need to run to the shops. Let's take a quick ad break and we'll be back with you shortly.
This is RV on Business.
Philip Jobe from South African Institute of Professional Accountants. I know you're short of time and we're going to be wrapping up soon. But one thing that I just want to clarify with you is this idea of high net worth individuals and a tax base of 50 million. It's a little bit complicated when it comes to business people. There's different structures, there's businesses, there's trusts, there's co-ownerships, there's sharings. There's all these different things that are in place. Am I right in saying that probably the most important thing for any business person when they start their career and they are accumulating wealth and assets is to have a reputable tax practitioner that can help you and guide you through the process?
No, I definitely agree with that statement fully. And one thing that we've seen recently is that a lot of people start involving their tax practitioners or tax advisors from a much earlier stage in these kind of transactions, which makes planning for the potential tax implications in the long run a lot easier. Tax practitioners have always had the thing of being the coming in and mopping up the mess and trying to then fight with SARS to say, but the intention was X and not Y, and this is why it happened. If the correct tax, if you've got a professional tax advisor on your side from the word go, a lot of your issues can be resolved. And it's also important to know that tax practitioners are no longer just compliance officers where they help you file your return. Their purpose is to help and guide you and teach you as a taxpayer what is the best way for you to do the things in the correct manner, and not just legal but ethical as well.
You know, Philip, but ultimately, if things are done correctly, then there's very little for you to do looking over your shoulder. Yes, you might need to pay the tax, but at least then you know that when the transaction comes to its end, in other words, the partnership is dissolved, the asset is sold, the business is realized, you haven't got a toxic matter in your hand that you're not quite sure what to do. You know, if it's done correctly, then you can actually reward and reap the benefits of having enjoyed it all the time, built it and sold it without having to worry that it's something that you need to do in a clandestine way.
You can then get on your yacht and you can sail away to the Caribbean without worrying that SARS will send warships after you, definitely.
Yeah, you got to worry more about pirates, I would suppose. But yes, that's exactly the point. But Philip, on that lighthearted note, as ever, thank you so much. And Philip, I actually got a call from a lady a few weeks ago now, many weeks ago, after our last discussion, to say, thank you so much. It is the first time I've actually understood what tax is, why tax is generated, how we pay it, why we pay it. So these discussions are really, really crucial to help the average person demystify this mystery called tax. But again, if you've got a tax practitioner who is approachable, who can speak to you in your language, your life is a lot easier. And Philip, you guys facilitate that. Thank you so much.
Only a pleasure, Avi, and thank you very much as well.
Great. I also just want to take this time to wish everybody a Chag Kashev, a Sameach, a happy and a kosher Pesach. And to my good friend Craig, who sits there in the background, invisible, makes things happen, keeps me in line, is the first message I get on a Tuesday morning. Craig, I wish you and your family a happy and a healthy Pesach. And please, God, all our hostages will be home by Pesach and be able to enjoy time with their family. The reality we know is not that simple, but we pray that their families will get peace and their family members coming home and being able to either lay them to rest or hold them in their bosom. Thank you for listening. Be well, and we'll chat to you next week.